Here it is, and there it goes, right through there for Johnny Furphy. KU goes up 4, and that should put this game on ice.
Yeah, make or miss, there's no path. Kansas just needs to put their hands in their pockets, get out of here, pat them on the butt, and get ready for Gonzaga.
But man, did they have to empty their bucket to get there. Second free throw, misses. Rebound, Samford, a desperation heave, won't matter. And KU will win it. Survive in advance, baby. That's exactly what the Jayhawks did tonight. You can rock. Chalk it up, the Jayhawks win 93-89.
Yes, it's all about surviving and advancing. KU doing that late last night, and then a quick turnaround. They'll play tomorrow early afternoon, which doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. But anyway, we'll talk about that much more coming up here on The Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We'll hear from Bill Self. We'll hear from Bucky McMillan about the controversial foul call late in that ball game. We'll address that foul call. We'll hear from Bill Self as well, defending Kevin McCuller after all the fallout of how Bill Self said some things when he told the media that Kevin McCuller was not going to play in the tournament. We'll look at what took place yesterday in the NCAA tournament. Check out how your bracket is doing. Have you burned it yet? And how about Oakland winning yesterday over Kentucky? Jack Golke, yes, a household name now, who made 10 three-pointers yesterday. We'll hear from him. And the women's tournament gets underway today, and we'll look at all the action on the schedule for today as well. We'll hear from Jeff Mitty, head coach of K-State Women, and the Tush Push. Is it going to be outlawed or allowed again in the National Football League, in particular for the Philadelphia Eagles? We'll touch upon that and much more here on The Ticket. We throw it to Dusty for a little local sports information.
Yeah, there was some NPL, Northern Plains League powerlifting yesterday in Lincoln. As far as the team standings and champions were concerned, on the girls' side, Thunder Ridge took first place, and on the boys' side, it was Lincoln coming home with the team championship. Individual gold medal winners for area athletes, 105 pounds on the girls' side, Alyssa Lopez of Lincoln, Bentley Smith of Lincoln at 114, Jennifer Glisher from Thunder Ridge won at 123, and Jasmine Ferguson from Thunder Ridge took the 132-pound class, Gracie Reiner of Osborne winning 148, and Cameron Ritzke of Thunder Ridge taking first place at 165 overall. Power weight went to Gianna Herenick of St. John's. Boys individual gold medal winners, Caden Snyder of Lincoln at 114, and at 123, Isaac Schulmeister from Sylvan Lucas. Caden Boudreaux of Lincoln, 132-pound championship. Trace Walter of Sylvan Lucas at 140 took first. Landon Bentz of Lakeside winning the 156-pound class. Zane Maupin of Sylvan Lucas taking first at 165. Ian Christine of Lakeside first at 173. Logan Meyer of Lincoln, was first at 181, and then Mason Baker of Thunder Ridge at 198 finished in first place, and then Ruben Steenkamp of the Longhorns at first at 220. Peter John Vanderlyn of Thunder Ridge took the heavyweight championship. So those are the final results as far as champions are concerned. The full results, everything that you need to know about the they do bench, clean, and squat are the three weights that get lifted and then get totaled up for total weight lifted for the overall results. But if you want to see who won each one of the individual results and all the final results from the tournament, you can check out ncksports.com.
All right, so four-seed KU wins. They have not lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament since they lost to Bradley, oddly enough, when KU was a four-seed back in 2006. That's pretty impressive, considering all the upsets we see in college basketball. Granted, KU's been a one or a two-seed many times, but we've seen 2 1-seeds lose to 16s. We've seen some twos lose to 15s. So, you know, there was a spell there early on in Bill Self's tenure. His first year, they went to Elite Eight, lost to Georgia Tech in overtime. I was there for that one in St. Louis, and still to this day, you know, Keith Langford fouling out was a... You know, people talk about the calls that KU does get, and they do get calls, and there's no doubt they do at Allen Fieldhouse. Kansas has gotten the shaft on some calls in the tournament in the history as well. So let's not... It's always convenient how we forget about the things that... You know, if you want to... If your agenda is to say KU gets all the calls, you conveniently forget the ones they don't get. If you're a KU fan and you say, we don't get any calls, that's convenient to forget the calls you do get, okay? Whether it's obvious in regards to you think it's home court cooking at Allen Fieldhouse compared to what we saw last night, which we'll get to it here in a moment. But there was a stretch there, back-to-back years. KU lost to Bucknell, lost to Bradley. It was Killer Bees. You didn't want to play against a team that started with B. Of course, Northern Iowa, they lost to in 09. That was the year after they won it all, and they were number one seed, and they lost. Actually, the year after that was Michigan. It was They lost to Michigan State the year after they won it all. It was 2010 when they lost to Northern Iowa, 2 years removed from the national championship and lost to Northern Iowa. And so they've had their shares, a share of upsets, but they haven't lost in the first round since 2006, which I think is pretty impressive. But KU yesterday against Samford, you know, I originally had Samford on my bracket. I changed it yesterday right here during the show because I thought everybody's jumping on Samford's bandwagon. And I'm watching the early part of this game, and Furphy hits a couple threes, Timberlake hit a three, Samford's jacking bad threes, and I'm sitting here going, this is not going to be a problem for Kansas, even the full court pressure. The only thing I was worried about was, would Kansas run out of gas maybe late in the game, shots be short? But Samford took some questionable shots. They just kind of flung it up there. Their pressure, I didn't think, was that great. Kansas getting easy buckets, attacking it. And when Kansas was up 22, I thought this is exactly what we talked about. If Kansas wins, they're going to win comfortably. Otherwise, they're going to lose. And then all of a sudden, Samford made a couple threes. And then a couple more. And then another one. And then another one. And a guy that made six threes all year made four.
Yeah.
Four for four. So weird things can happen in the tournament. Kansas's 22-point lead, 63-41 with 16 minutes to go, was all the way down to one. Jaden Campbell had a three-pointer, 20 seconds left, and this is when we get into the controversy. KU broke Samford's full-court press on a deep pass for Hunter Dickinson and Nicholas Timberlake, who played very well last night, by the way. And if he didn't, they're done. And Timberlake, he will go strong to the bucket and try to dunk it with two hands. And usually you would say that's the way to go, attack the goal. But it does allow a guy to block it from behind easier than if you actually are going up, angling, going up with a right-hand layup to where he's got to go through your body. Now, still, they can still block it, come across the top. I've seen great blocks. And so I'm not going to blame Nicholas Timberlake for going strong to the hoop and trying to jam it. I still think you go aggressive and strong, and if you're going to pick on Nicholas Timberlake on these type of things, then dear Lord, I don't know. Have you ever played basketball? Because I know I haven't jumped that high. I don't know what it's like. But anywho, KU was up at 10 at halftime, up to 22. It gets down to 1, and you're sitting here going, oh, my goodness, what a colossal. You know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't have called it a meltdown because Samford just made a ton of shots. You know, it wasn't like KU made tons of mistakes. I thought Kansas got a little bit tight. They missed a free throw here and there. It wasn't like they were choking. I didn't feel that way. Sometimes when you see these big leads evaporate, it's a combination of choking, the other team making some plays. Samford made some threes. You're just sitting there going, dear Lord. I mean, all of a sudden, everything they throw up there is going in. And so anyway, it was a one-point game, 20 seconds left. Dickinson throws at Timberlake. He goes strong for an open-court dunk. And when I watched it live, I thought it was a foul. I mean, and let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen. Be honest with yourself. When you watched it live, did you think it was a foul? Did you, watching it live, as you watched the play with no replay to look at, did you think it was a foul?
I thought it was a foul because the official called it a foul.
Right.
Like
But with your own eyes, did you think it was a foul? Timberlake goes flying and hits the ground.
I saw the back end of it.
I'm asking you, as you watched it live,
I'll say happened, but I was iffy on it.
Okay, that's fair.
Like because I saw the way his hands were on the rim and the way he fell,
right?
Even live,
right?
And so I was iffy on it, but I'll say yeah.
Yeah.
And I was anticipatory like the official probably was.
Well, and that's the thing that I think is interesting, and we all do this, and it's always convenient, and that is that, well, he anticipated the call. Listen, as a fan, I anticipated it.
Yeah.
You just said you anticipated it. Because the guy is chasing from so far behind. He's trying to foul. I mean, the first thing that pops in my head is, he better foul Timberlake, or you got to make Timberlake go to the line. It's a one-point game.
Yeah.
This guy's got to foul. He's got to rake him across the arms, try to go for the ball, and put him on the line. Don't let him get an and one. He's got to go to the line and make two free throws to go up three.
Uh-huh.
That's what's going through my head. So what? So if you're thinking he's got a foul, what are you anticipating as a fan?
He's probably going to foul.
Yeah. He's way behind the play. He hustled his butt off and made a sensational play. Replay proves that it was a clean block. But this is the thing that people have. There's no... Listen, was it a missed call? Yeah, it was a missed call. And when we go back and we can slow it down and rewind it, it's obvious that it was a clean block. The official does not have the benefit of this. All right, I just established it for you. Dusty and I both said, and you need to be honest with yourself. Get this hatred for KU out of your eyes for just 10 seconds. Because if this happened to K-State, the same thing would be happening with KU fans firing at K-State saying they got a call and the refs blew it. Okay, so you can insert any school in place of KU on this call. If it's Kentucky, Duke, I don't care who it is. If you're cheering for the upset, which everybody in America was except KU fans, just like everybody's cheering for Oakland except Kentucky fans. Mm-hmm. If you're cheering for that, and obviously K-State fans are pulling big time for KU to lose, just like KU's pulling for K-State to lose, okay, when they're in the tournament. But if you can be objective, which is hard as hell for anybody in this world to do anymore, be objective and say to yourself, here's my first question to you. What was going through your mind when Timberlake caught the ball ahead of everybody and he goes strong for a dunk? What are you thinking? And for me, it's simple. He's going to dunk it. KU's up three. Or this guy has somehow got to catch up to him and foul him. Now, let me ask you a question. I'm a human being. You're a human being. You bleed red. I bleed red. Is the official a robot?
No.
What do you think the official's thinking?
The same thing.
The same damn thing! Yeah. The official's thinking the same damn thing. And by the way, if you call that play 10 times in a row, based on how it was going, as a guy is ahead of the pack, more often than not, a guy coming from behind is trying to, in that situation, is trying to foul no matter what. He's trying to make damn sure the guy doesn't dunk it for two. Mm-hmm. Because it's a one-point game. You don't think the official's seen this 1,000 times in his career? These are some of the best officials in America that are doing these tournament games. You don't think he's seen this 1,000 times? And I would be willing to bet you a majority of the time this official's been in this situation, who made that call last night, I would be willing to bet you a majority of the time it's a foul. A majority of the time, a guy doesn't come back and block it cleanly. A majority of the time, that's a foul. Well, the ref can't anticipate it. But it's human nature anticipated. I anticipated it sitting on my Barca lounger. You anticipated it. Anybody watching the game anticipated, as a KU fan, you anticipated, please dunk it and don't get fouled. And if you're Samford, foul him! Nobody's thinking, unbelievable block and we get the ball the other way. You're thinking, whatever you got to do, foul the guy. What do you think the ref's thinking? He's thinking, this guy's chasing from behind. He's desperate. The official probably knows the situation. It's a one-point game. And he's also thinking, protect the guy going in for a dunk. Which all of America seemed to get all pissed off about when something happened at Fort Hays State University at a 1A basketball game that I saw. Okay? So, yes, the official anticipated the call. And he missed the call. Let me make this very clear. He missed the call. It's obvious. Anybody argues that he didn't miss the call, now you're wearing the KU crimson and blue glasses.
Yeah.
He missed the call. But here's the thing. There were players that missed free throws. There were plays that weren't run. There were dumb, stupid turnovers by both teams in this game. And I'm going to tell you something. There were calls in this game that made me scratch my head way more than that one even. I mean, there was a couple that were called on Kansas. I'm like, what the heck was that? There's a couple times that Kansas got away with shoves they didn't call. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough to officiate this much physicality. And the game was helter-skelter. It was helter-skelter. Up and down, fast and going. And by the way, refs are not robots. Let me repeat this. So they're running up and down more so than they normally do in a game like that as well. And people don't even think about it. Because you think these guys are in top-fit physical shape. And some of them maybe aren't. So the official had a pretty good view of it. Another official didn't call it. And 9 times out of 10, I would say, on that play, everybody in America watching it's thinking, it's got to be a foul or back away and let him dunk it. But here's the part that a lot of people are overlooking here. And once again, I'm not making I don't want to sound like the official. Here's the thing I want to make clear. Officiating is not easy, and it's so easy for these dumbasses on social media, and I'll say it, the idiots on social media that have never put on a striped jersey, that have never picked up a whistle, and God knows probably didn't even go out for a walk, but sat and played on their freaking Xbox all day long, and I think there's some of these people, okay, that order in food and aren't too damn lazy to get in their car and go get it. Okay, these people are the ones that sit here and talk about how the ref isn't in shape, the ref anticipated. Oh, dear God, stop it. You know what? You anticipate when you're driving down the road, and I bet you've messed up a few times. You know? You anticipated somebody to stop at a stop sign, and they didn't. Guess what? You might have had a fender bender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me establish this.
The call was missed. It was missed. When official misses one call, we go and we freak out about one call, especially if it goes against our team or the team that we were cheering for. We immediately go to one call. We rarely go back and go, you know, Johnny Furphy missed two pretty important free throws early in the game. Or we don't go back and say, you know, Samford took some really stupid-ass shots. We don't blame Samford for losing the game unless the kid misses two free throws and they're down one, right? Then we blame the kid. Mm-hmm. Once again, we don't mention that the coach made a dumb time. He called a dumb timeout. Or they ran the baseline, weren't supposed to, and that was a turnover. Or in Kentucky's case, grab a missed free throw and throw it out of bounds, not knowing it was a one-shot foul attempt last night. Where's everybody ripping all those kids and all the and the coaches? And well, that wasn't the official's fault, was it? No. So here's my point. Nicholas Timberlake goes in strong to dunk it. I'm anticipating, you're anticipating, everybody in America is anticipating one of two things more than likely. The third thing you're not thinking of is a clean block from that far behind. You're not thinking that.
Not while that's all going
no,
on.
No, no, of course not. And no. By the way, that's the only way you can think about it. Because that's all the official has. When it happens, live. Bam, bam. It's not a reviewable play. You and I can review it at home. CBS can replay it a million times. We can replay it on social media. And you know what? The official will look at it, and he ain't stupid. He'd be watching it with you, drinking a beer with you, and said, yep, missed that one. He ain't even going to argue with you. But part of this that is being overlooked is, what happened to Timberlake after the block? He goes flying and hits the floor and lands face first. Now, imagine if the official says to himself, he goes, I'm just going to swallow my whistle. Then we go back and Samford makes the shot and they win the game. And we look back and you know what we're talking about? How in the world can you not call that? Timberlake got flipped. He fell on his face. How in the world is that a no-call? You know the guy's trying to foul him. Don't you know the situation? How do you not call that? See how this works? It goes either way. Here's the thing I'm trying to say here, is that he anticipated the call. Much like you and I just admitted we anticipated one of those two things happening. The last thing we were thinking was a super unbelievable block cleanly from behind. We weren't thinking that, and I wasn't thinking it until I saw the replay. I'm like, oh, that was clean. KU got away with one. Right away, I'm like, oh, he missed the call. But I also have to understand that 9 times out of 10 on a play like that, it's a foul. 9 times out of 10, that's a foul. In regular situations, go and watch a whole bunch of games. 9 times out of 10, it's either back off, let the guy dunk it, or it's a foul to make him go to the line. And when a guy follows through, and you're absolutely right, and the replay proves this, but once again, the official does not have the benefit of going back to replay, and all these people don't understand that. We see the replay, he grabs the rim and falls off the rim. The official sees, one, a guy trying to block from behind, swatting at the ball, okay? And he didn't take a short windup. He's trying to swat it, okay, which is what he should do. And if he gets all ball, yay for him. If he gets arm, he fouls him. Listen, I think the Samford guy's trying to foul him, and he got all ball. It worked out perfectly for him. It was a hell of a play by the kid, and it's unfortunate that it didn't count. There's no doubt in my mind it sucks that happened. It does. I don't want a game decided on a call. Never do. I don't care who's playing. Whether it's my favorite team, your favorite team, whether it's high school, college, pro, I do not want an official call that is wrong to decide a game. And technically, we do not know if that decided the game.
No.
Okay? I'll explain that in a moment as well. But 9 times out of 10, that is going to be a foul. Or it's back off, let him have a dunk, and that's obvious, don't have to call anything. But the carry through and when Timberlake hit the deck, I think completely sold it for the official. I think that made him feel like he probably got it right. Now, did he have a chance to go run and go, hey, buddy, you missed this one. Come back and look at it yourself right here during the game. What's the point? You can't review it. Now, people say, well, you got to review that. Why do we review all these many other things and we talk about getting it right, but you can't review that? I think that's a fair argument. My question is, how do you do that and avoid having 3-hour-long college basketball games. It is funny, and I thought Clark Kellogg made a good point yesterday, because Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley were bitching and moaning about it after the game. And I agree that it was a missed call. Once again, let me establish this. But they're talking about how you got to review it. And Clark Kellogg, I thought, was he said exactly what I was thinking. Where do you draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how you guys, he even said, he goes, you guys are complaining about all the reviews during this game. Now you want to review more? Then Kenny Smith said, challenge. Well, okay, now that's a whole different concept that Kenny didn't say before that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, coaches challenge. But here's the thing. What happens, what happens if you do not, I think it's tough when you're in full-fledged action like that in regards to a challenge. I know the NBA has challenges, but if there was a challenge in this situation, okay, what would have happened? Okay, if Samford challenged a play immediately, he stops a five. Well, they called the foul. Okay, so the stoppage in play. Samford would have had a 5-on-4. By the way, 15 seconds left, down one. Mm-hmm. Timberlake was laying flat on his chest, so they would have had a 5-on-4. We don't know if they scored or not. We don't know. The percentages are they would have 5-on-4, but we don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, we do not know that. They might have hit a 3. Kansas get the ball, baseball pass to Timberlake, cherry picking. He gets a dunk, and we're going to overtime. We don't know. I love how people know what's going to happen. We don't know unless it was actual final play of the game. We do not know. Is there any question that Samford would have had an advantage 5-on-4 had that not been called a foul? Absolutely. You are correct. It would have been 5-on-4, 15 seconds left. Samford was out of timeouts, by the way. Okay? So they might not have been able to put something together and would have had a horrible possession and didn't execute. I don't know. You don't know. None of us know because a foul was called. But if we would enact the challenge system on this play, okay, as Kenny Smith was mentioning, which I'm not saying it's a horrible idea, but I'm sitting here going, how do you implement? So the foul was called. What happens? Samford coach challenges. Let's say he has a challenge. He challenges immediately.
Yeah.
They go to replay. It was a clean block. Samford ball. Does that change the fact that now Samford is 5-on-5 instead of 5-on-4?
Yeah, it changes the whole concept of what you would have done.
Well, that's what sure. I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even if you challenge it, people are still going to complain.
Sure.
Because, well, it was 5-on-4, now it's 5-on-5. So even if you challenge it and you say, well, we corrected a missed call. Yeah, but now Samford, you don't go back and say, Timberlake, go lay down on the baseline.
Yeah.
And when we blow the whistle, you got to hurry and get back on defense. No, you're 5-on-5.
You're set up.
So
yeah.
even if you get the call corrected, it's still not corrected because Samford now doesn't have an open floor opportunity with 15 seconds.
Sure.
Is it better? Is
Absolutely.
It better? It's yeah. better. But people are still going to complain it's still not right because that still took a 5-on-4 away. So nobody's ever going to be happy about it. And then how many challenges do you allow a team to have? And then what are challengeable? Is it every single thing imaginable is challengeable? Like you can challenge that the free throw shooter took more than 10 seconds to shoot a free throw. Is that challengeable? I'm going to tell you, the guy for Duquesne yesterday, I swear to God, he took more than 10 seconds shooting free throws. 94% foul shooter. I'm looking at my clock. I'm like, dear God, he is as close as possible. And nobody even mentions this during the broadcast. It's just like that rule doesn't apply anymore. But it does in the NBA with Giannis, except he takes 12 before they call it. Okay? So the question is, what do you allow to be reviewable? Is it everything? I've argued this for 1,000 years, but I'm not that old. But I've told you this before. The NFL has replay. College football has replay. Fans get tired of it sitting in the stands. They get tired of the long breaks. They get tired of these long reviews. Barkley says make it quicker. That's easy for any Joe Schmo to say. How are you going to make it quicker, Charles? Are you going to put a clock on it? You got to do something to make it quicker. If you can't see it, I've said this before. You have 60 seconds. If you can't within 60 seconds see something conclusive, the call on the field stands. And people will still argue and say, it's clearly the other way. We do it now, even with replay. Okay? If you want to eliminate replay altogether, fine. People will complain, though, we got it wrong. Well, we still get it wrong with replay.
Mm.
I don't know how many times that still happened. But if you're going to do replay, and always the argument about replay is, we got to get it right. That's what they always say. Gene Steratore said it last night. Well, they got to get it right. I know there's a lot of reviews and it takes a lot of time, but we got to get it right. Did they get it right last night?
Absolutely.
Hell no, they didn't get it right. because it's not reviewable. So I've always said about replay, if you want replay to not be a joke, if you want replay to be absolutely, completely legitimate, everything has to be reviewable slash challengeable. Now, there's the difference. If everything's reviewable, we will never get a game over.
Mm-hmm.
So not you can't review everything, but what my point is, everything is reviewable via a challenge. You give each coach two challenges, three challenges, a half, a game, whatever it is. I mean, we got the NFL. They get a few challenges. If they get they get to keep their challenges. If they win them, if they lose them, they can lose a challenge, blah, 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 lose a timeout. Whatever system you want to come up with. And I would argue get rid of the under 2 minute reviews all the time. Just seriously, go more to what the NBA is doing from this standpoint. You only can do they automatically review stuff under 2 minutes in NBA now, or is it challenged?
They did for a bit. I don't know if it's okay. Still like that or not.
I don't know.
There may be a playoff games that were always taking
they take
forever to finish.
Too. So here's my solution. Charles Barkley says make it quicker, okay, but he has no solution other than make it quicker. Here, I'll get a little bit more specific. Here's what I would say. Don't even worry about under 2 minutes review all these freaking things. I watched the Boise State Colorado game the other night, and dear God, we reviewed everything every 3 seconds. And it's like, what's the point of having officials? Okay? So it undermines them a little bit because then they're questioning themselves. But Todd Titchener, a Major League Baseball umpire, says review is important because it can fix, you know, we're human, we make mistakes. If you had instant replay, Don Dinkinger's call in Game 6 of the World Series between the Cardinals and Royals would have been overturned.
Yeah.
Now, do we know the Cardinals would have still lost that game or the Royals would have won that game? We don't. It would have changed the whole perplexion of that inning, yes, okay? But the point of replay is to get it right. So then make every single thing reviewable, but it has to be through challenge. And notice what I just said. Everything is reviewable, but it has to be via challenge. So here's my point. There is no more we review anything under 2 minutes. Let me rephrase it. You review anything anytime during the game, including the last 2 minutes, if it is challenged by a coach. That's it. So if a coach wants the challenge, he has three challenges. Let's just say he has three challenges in the game. We'll play with that. You have three challenges in the game. If Bill Self wants to challenge all three things in the first half, and he gets all of them right, if he gets it right, he keeps his challenge. Make it simple. If you get it wrong, you get it wrong, you lose a challenge. But if you get it right, you get to keep your three challenges. Mm-hmm. How's that? If you get it right, you don't lose a challenge because guess what? You were right. If you get it wrong, you lose a challenge. So let's say Bill Self uses three challenges in the first half, and he's wrong on all three, or there's nothing conclusive. Okay, now, 12 seconds left in the game. There's a lob into KJ Adams. It's tipped by a Samford player. KU doesn't touch it, and they say, Samford's ball. Too damn bad. Too damn bad. You used your challenges. Mm-hmm. Don't go to the monitor. Well, it's all about getting it right, Wade. I don't understand what you're doing. No. It was the coaches could have saved their challenges. We don't have unlimited timeouts. If a coach burns all his timeouts in the first half, does he get an extra one because he burned them all in the first half? No. So if you burn all your challenges, you burn all your challenges. That's up to you and your coaching staff. If you're really bad at challenging things and you run out, then, well, you know, boo-hoo-hoo. You didn't get a call the final 15 seconds because we automatically went to the review like we used to. You burned all your challenges. I would suggest that you save one of those challenges, just like I suggest you save a timeout for an end of a game. That would be my solution. Then you only have so many stoppages. You don't have 10 stoppages in the last 60 seconds like they did with Colorado Boise State. And yes, there's going to be some calls that are going to be missed. Well, guess what? There already are!
Yeah.
There was calls left and right last night and in every game yesterday where you said, that call's wrong, that call's wrong. I mean, there was this one guy traveled three times on one possession, didn't get it right. I mean, there's wrongs all the time. There's missed calls all the time. So whether you say everything's reviewable or if you say everything is challengeable, you're not going to review every single play. You're not going to challenge every single play. You have to have a limit on it. Otherwise, the game will never end. So let's just go ahead and make it universal just like timeouts. You only get so many timeouts in the game. When you get to the final 8 seconds, Dusty, and you got a good length of the floor, and you're out of timeouts, too bad. You can't advance it, right? We don't go, oh, no, you used all your timeouts. I guess we should let you advance it anyway because, boo-hoo, you used all your... No, you have so many timeouts. You know the rules of the game before it starts, just like challenges. You know how many challenges you have. The NFL coaches know how many challenges they have. Why can't we apply it in basketball? You can save your challenges, or you can be an idiot and challenge something you shouldn't even challenge. And Andy Reid's had a few of those moments, hasn't he? He's challenged certain things. You're like, what is he challenging?
Like, why is he not challenging?
And then you're like, why isn't he challenging?
What are we doing here?
Right. It's a fourth down and one. And it looks like you got it, and you're punting, and you're not challenging it. And you know what? But that's on the coaches. And you may say, well, wait a minute. That's on the coaches. If the refs would have got it right in the first place, we wouldn't have to challenge it. Yeah, but they're not perfect. Let me establish that again. They're not perfect.
In all the years of all the sports.
Nobody's perfect. No player is, no coach is, no broadcaster is. Nobody in the world and ever lived on this earth is perfect. Okay? Nobody is. So, listen, it was a missed call. There's no doubt about it. Did it benefit Kansas? Obviously it did. Obviously it did. Do we know exactly what would have happened had they let it play out and called it right? No, we do not. You can venture to think what you want to think. You do not. And the fact that the call was missed robbed us of seeing that. That is a very good point. Here is Bucky Millen, head coach of Samford, on the call on the block with 15 seconds left. That was a clean block. Anybody that says otherwise, you are a big-time major Jayhawk homer.
I have seen the play. I thought AJ made an incredible play on it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not fault in the call. You know, some people can see it different ways. But I was really proud of our guys' ability to go make a play. And at the end of the day, you know, AJ's recovery there, if there is no whistle, I'm not blaming the whistle, but if there's no whistle, we're going to have a numbers advantage going the other way to advance to round two. That's how close the game was. And that's how well our guys played because we were down by, what's the maximum we're down? So we're down by 22 and we're going to have the ball there. You know, however much time left going the other way with a great opportunity. So, you know, it is what it is.
Listen, you can rationalize anything you want, okay? If you're a KU fan, let me go ahead and play the role of KU fan. I'll play the role of Samford fan as well, okay? And you can add to something that you want to. So let's play I'll play the role of a KU fan. If you're not down 22, maybe that play doesn't matter. You were down 22. I mean, you were giving up dunks, alley-oops. Your defense was horrible. You were jacking bad threes, you know? If you wouldn't have been down 22, you might have been ahead at that point and wouldn't have come down to that call. If you're a Samford person, you're saying, listen, we were robbed of an opportunity to pull off an unbelievable comeback because we did pull off a comeback. We were down one. We made an unbelievable play. A player made a great play. He hustled, as the coach said, and we would have had a 5-on-4 opportunity, and we were robbed of that opportunity. Now, we don't know if the opportunity would have been fulfilled and of its potential, and they would have scored, but we do know we were robbed of the opportunity. I go back to the KUK State game that ended up Svi Mykhailiuk winning, okay, on an 18-step travel. Okay, it wasn't that many, but it was. And then people were arguing about how many. It was so funny after that whole play because KU fans argued about how it was a travel but not as bad of a travel as you think. I don't give a crap if it was five steps or three. It's a travel, okay? I know it, and you know it, and everybody in America knew it, okay? And I heard KU fans say, well, even if they called it, we're going to win in overtime anyway. Which, honestly, I agree 1,000%. Kansas would have won that game anyway in overtime. I believe that. However, do I know that?
No.
No. But what is the counter argument? If you're a K-State fan, you know what? You're probably right. You might be right. You could be right. But we deserve the opportunity.
There was no opportunity.
Yeah. And we were robbed of that. That's what... If you're a Samford fan, that's what you
very
say
similar,
today.
Right?
Exactly. Very similar.
There was an opportunity
similar.
That we
now,
didn't get.
Now, this one's not as egregious, okay? I understand this
missing this. Yeah.
I understand the ref missing this one. I do. I think I would have missed it. I think a lot of refs would have missed it. I think you're anticipating a 9 out of 10 time situation where a guy's desperate. He's desperate to foul. I mean, I've seen guys that refs are anticipating a team down 5 or 6, and what you don't know is they're trying to trap and not foul, and a ref thinks that, well, they're trying to foul. And I've seen refs not call a foul when the guys are trying to foul. Now, some of that has to be communication from the coaching staff saying, hey, we're going to not try to foul here, but you can't tell all three officials. They don't have time to get together and say, hey, this coach told me they're going to try not to foul. Okay, great, but what if they actually do foul? I still got to call it. So it is not easy to be an official, and I know officials have a hard job. And I know there are times where we get all up in arms about officials. I do get it. and they missed this one. There is no doubt about it. The Svi Mykhailiuk missed call was way more egregious than this one, because that should be easy for any of the officials to see in a situation where he took at least three steps, okay? Yeah. This one is not as egregious because of the way you anticipate it. Well, you can't anticipate. Come on. People anticipate. Officials anticipate. Ask any officials officiated. Yes, they anticipate. You have to anticipate. You have to anticipate that this guy is going to try to take a charge. You're anticipating charge block, right? You see a collision coming. You don't think the official's anticipating charge block? I mean, of course he is. We're human. But it does suck. It sucks for Samford because they were robbed of the opportunity of a 5-on-4 because of a missed call. There is no way around it. I guarantee you that official feels really bad that he messed up the call. And now here, what happens if he officiates another game in this tournament, exact same situation, he swallows his whistle and ends up being a clear foul that determines the game the other way. Then you're all going to be yelling at the guy, how do you not call it? Did he not anticipate that? You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. That's just the way officiating is. And I know they're going to be already slaying it 1,000 times already. K-State fans think that KU gets every single call in the world since God created man. And that's not true. Okay? It's not true. Now, do they get most calls at Allen Fieldhouse? It seems that way. Okay? There were calls that did not go KU's way last night. You could rewind the tape and show it. There are calls that did not go their way. Every game has calls that go against both teams. It's just the way it is. Now, there might be more that go against one team than another. Is that coincidence? Is the game rigged? Is gambling involved? That's a whole other discussion for a whole other day. So Kansas, part of surviving and advancing is what? Sometimes you get a little lucky.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt they got lucky last night.
Yeah. I'm past the pettiness of the purple glasses affecting my opinion of what happened in that situation. I mean, it's so bad. Some of the things like from K-State fans on social media, and it's like, oh my goodness, just move on. What I'm looking at is when, you know, people that are covering national, people that are covering, right, not even covering a team, they're just here to watch the tournament, right? Like, they're just a national person, or they're just here watching the tournament. Right. They have no affiliation with anybody related to Samford or Kansas, mm-hmm, and they're all going nuts about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you look. That's sure. where you understand that, yeah, there was a missed call here. This was not the right call.
But let me stop you for a second. I don't need Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and Ernie Johnson, and Clark Kellogg to tell me it's a missed call. I have my own damn eyes. I know it's a missed call. I don't need people to be my eyes for
it. No. And that's not what I'm saying.
I know they missed the call.
What I'm saying is I'm that person. I'm not the person that's sitting here complaining that KU got a call because I'm a K-State fan, is basically what I wanted to say.
Anybody with eyes knows it was a missed call.
That's what I'm saying, is yes. Everybody, the national people, the KU right. fans, the K-State fans, the Samford fans, the yes. Baylor fans, the Duke fans, the Kentucky fans, everybody in the world with eyes knows that was a foul.
Yes.
And those are the people that are going to complain that it wasn't a foul.
Wasn't
I mean,
foul.
That the call was wrong, that it was not a foul. Everybody with eyes and knows basketball knows that. The one thing I want to say about your 9 out of 10 thing I wanted to piggyback on is, like you said, 9 out of 10 times it's probably going to be a foul there. Mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 times the official's going to call a foul there, whether it's a foul or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes hand in hand. Like, I've seen multiple times in high school games where it's clear that there was not a foul committed, but the team's down by 1 or 2 points,
yep.
and the officials know that they want to foul,
yep.
and they call a foul.
Right.
Well, I can see with my own eyes that they got under pressure and bobbled the ball and lost it, and there was no contact, but
right.
a foul was called,
right?
Because there's pressure there, and they think and they're anticipating that a foul is going to happen.
Sure.
And so I'm not saying that anticipatory stuff doesn't happen. What I will say about when I saw that one is, like, there's a lot of times, you know, you're watching the end of a game and you know that a team wants to foul, and it's pretty obvious that they fouled, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, there's a foul. This one I was like, I actually want to see the replay on this. Mm-hmm. When you actually think in your mind, you're like, I want to see the replay on this, that's one that's like, mm-hmm. maybe this wasn't a foul.
Right.
And but I mean, anticipatory for us thinking, yeah, he needs to foul,
mm-hmm.
but in the end you're like, oh, I don't know if he did foul.
Yeah,
and
but
then you come
but
to
the official
replay
doesn't
see,
have the
no,
benefit.
They don't have the benefit of that. What I'm saying is, like, when I'm looking mm-hmm. at it and seeing that, and then that goes into my mind of, It's tough because the anticipatory part of it is there, right?
Yeah, it's human nature.
But it's also your job to do your job,
right,
and not anticipate that there's actually going to be a foul call. You got to actually watch it and see the foul mm-hmm. happen. That's your job.
But you know what? If people clear off the bench and there's an altercation, the official's supposed to now not anticipate, just let a guy punch a guy?
Yeah.
I mean, he still has to anticipate, hey, okay,
sure,
this is starting to get out of hand. I saw an elbow earlier. I got to anticipate and watch this. Well, you can't anticipate. You got to call it when you see it. So you just go ahead and let somebody commit assault? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, too.
Yeah.
But I'm just playing devil's advocate on the other side of this.
No, I agree with you.
Anticipatory, yeah, but I would hate it if I'm that kid that's getting a trap at the end of a game and I just got a steal when I'm down by two and I get called for a foul.
And I've seen it.
Yeah.
Many times.
And it's like, dude, I didn't foul. I got a steal. We should have the ball and a chance to tie or take the lead right now.
Right.
And so I get it. I get both sides of it. I'm just saying, like, your job still in the end is to call what you see.
Yeah.
And if you didn't see it, it didn't happen, then you're calling something that didn't happen. And that's what happened last night. Right, wrong, otherwise, however he called it, that's what happened last night. He called something that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's just like I look at all that. The one thing also that I wanted to add on your since there was a lot in there.
Sure.
On the like the challenge thing, and you're like, well, they're not going to get the ball on a 5-4 break, right? If they challenge it, they still get the ball, but not in the same situation.
Ball throwing.
The thing that I compare that to is like in football, like the ball's blown dead and you've got a fumble recovery and it's a clear recovery for a touchdown. Right. Now, they used to be if the ball was blown dead, it was over.
Right.
You didn't get the ball. But now they say clear recovery, you get the ball. You don't get the touchdown.
Right.
You get the ball where you recovered it. Mm-hmm. But at least they've fixed that part of it where it's a turnover and you get the ball.
Yeah.
So that'd be a very similar situation here. Yeah.
Still not
fully
correct.
We don't get what we want. Because we want the touchdown, and we want the 5-on-4 break after the block shot, but at least we get the ball, and they don't keep it in this chance, in this scenario for KU, with a chance to add to their lead, or in the other scenario with football would be to just keep the football and continue their drive. So there's a lot of things, I think, with review and challenges and things like that that don't always go the perfect way for you, but they still help your cause a little bit, and they can put you in the right spot.
I agree with that, but it's not fully correctable because you can't reenact a 5-on-4. You can't reenact that he had a touchdown return on fumble recovery. However, what we're seeing, what we see now in the National Football League, and we see it in college football now too, is more often than not, they swallow the whistle, even if it's obvious that it, because they know review is going to, it's a turnover, so you review a turnover, so they know they're going to be covered. So if you apply that now to college basketball, if you apply that same system, you know what you're going to have? You're going to have officials swallowing their whistle and then making Bill Self waste a challenge with 2 minutes to go in the first half on an obvious breakaway dunk where he got fouled. Because you're going to swallow the whistle. So that's part of the flaw with that as well, is
absolutely,
you might have to use more challenges because the officials will be like, now the one thing NFL has is, you know, if it's a turnover, it's automatic reviewed. Well, what do you do in basketball? You
know, automatically reviewing every foul.
Right.
Or non-foul.
Yeah, I don't know. There is no perfect system.
There's never going to be. That's my point of why I brought that part up. Is like you can sit here and say that, and then I can sit here and say, well, dude, returned a touchdown. Like a fumble was gone. Listen, I know that at the whistle, this guy that
ball,
was 40 yards away stopped,
points.
But he's 40 yards away from the guy that recovered. He's going to go take it in, no matter if the whistle blew or not.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Well, think about that Chiefs-Titans game when Derrick Johnson lit up the quarterback and somehow the forward progress was stopped. And it's like if they would have corrected that, because there was a fumble and it was picked up and would have been a touchdown. They corrected, okay, there's not the forward progress thing. It is deemed a fumble, but they don't get the return.
Yeah.
Still not right at all, but at least you made a little bit better.
Yeah.
So let's hear from Bill Self on escaping the win. I mean, literally escaping with a win.
You know, it's a hard game for us with very little depth, and you got to play guys the entire game. But first half, we should have been up more than 10. The second half, when we got out ahead, then there's no question they were the dominant team after that. I think we played kind of not to lose, and then they played in attack mode. I thought they were great. You know, our ball screen defense was obviously not any good, but they had a guy go 4-4 from three. It's 6-26 for the year, and they picked on us on that with Hunt guarding the five-man. But, you know, second half, we took care of the ball. We only had 6 turnovers. We had 12 the first half. And we actually did some good things, but what we couldn't do, we couldn't guard the arc. And to get outscored 30 points beyond the arc and still win a game is pretty remarkable.
It is. Of course, it's easier when it's a high-scoring game like it was, 93-89 in the final. KG Adams at 20. Hunter Dickinson, 19 points, 20 rebounds. Looked better than I thought he might with that dislocated shoulder that he had a couple weeks ago. Nicholas Timberlake with 19. He came up big. Johnny Furphy, 16. DeJuan Harris with 13. So KU now will move on in the Midwest region. They'll face the 5-seed Gonzaga. KU just finished up about 11 o'clock Mountain Time last night. And now they got to play tomorrow at 1:15 Mountain Time. And Gonzaga played the earlier game, but they played the night situation, and then they could easily had Gonzaga KU, which would be better prime time, I would think, for TV. They could put them in the evening, and then the other one could easily been early in the day because those teams had played earlier in the day. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. If you're Gonzaga and Kansas, especially Kansas, you don't appreciate it. Of course, some people would say, well, you shouldn't even be in this game because if they would have actually let that play go, you would have lost, which we still don't know for sure. So anyway, KU's got a quick turnaround. They had to spend a lot of energy. Gonzaga crushed McNeese. I'm not going to say they don't have a chance to beat Gonzaga because Gonzaga is not what they once were. And Bill Self will have a game plan and so forth and so on. But I don't give Kansas much of a chance in this game tomorrow. I would give about, well, I tell you what, if I'm being optimistic, I give them a 20% chance. That's being optimistic. I just don't see how they have to finish late, quick turnaround. They don't have much bench. They had to expend a ton of energy in style of a game that was, up and down. And Gonzaga's not going to do that all game long like Samford did. But Gonzaga was able to rest some guys. They cruised. There was less mental stress in that game. They led from beginning to end and crushed McNeese, who some people thought was going to pull off this upset. I just don't see Kansas winning this game tomorrow. Really don't.
And you got to expect if KU is going to win games, they've got to do it like they did it last night with all five guys scoring, right? You're not going to get that from Timberlake again, are you?
You don't expect it.
You know, Furphy maybe because he's starting to improve, and as the season went on, you're starting to be able to rely on him more offensively. But I wouldn't be expecting a game like that from Timberlake again. And then now you've got to have it, and now the stakes are a little bit higher probably because you're not going to have a 22-point lead likely at any point in the game. So you're probably going to be fighting back at times. And I don't know. I part of me wants to say like Gonzaga was just too good last night.
Yeah, and they'll come down to earth.
They'll come back down to earth too. And I just – there's part of me that is actually like, okay, you might win this game. But
I will say everybody's jumping on the Gonzaga bandwagon, much they did like Samford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so – I still think Gonzaga is going to win, but
might be better.
Maybe a little. I'll put it at 40%.
Okay, wow,
for Kansas instead of 20.
All right. Well, I'm more optimistic with K State than you are, and you're more optimistic in KU than I am. I see how that works. Hey, you might be very well right. But no, they have a chance. If you have Bill Self as head coach,
you don't just wipe it out.
I mean, you got guys that are all Americans or good players. KJ Adams, DeJuan Harris, and Hunter Dickinson. You've got a good core. You can beat Gonzaga. There's no doubt you can. But I think the scenario and then playing early just adds
it
to the toughness.
No, it doesn't. It's not very formidable for them to be able to do that.
Not as conducive to win, I don't think. So we talked about Kevin McCullough not playing in this tournament. We talked about it yesterday on the show too, about Bill Self and what he — it really wasn't necessarily what he said, it was more of how he said it to the media when he said that McCullough was out for the tournament, although he did say Kevin says, he didn't say the doctors say. So this is pretty interesting. So yesterday before the game, Bill Self, who doesn't go on Twitter hardly ever, had a long thing defending Kevin McCullough. And so here's Bill Self explaining why he went to Twitter. And by the way, for all the people that say, oh, we're doomed. I saw people tweeting, KU fans, we're doomed. Bill Self's worried about these things and typing on Twitter. They didn't play till like 9 o'clock Central time last night. He had some things, had some free time. Here's Bill Self on why he went to Twitter defending Kevin McCullough.
I had players come to me and tell me he was getting roasted on social media, and I said, why was he getting roasted? So I looked at my interview and the thing that I was told is he's getting roasted because people are looking at your body language and your body language during an interview, and you know it's a 45-second snippet in a 5.5-minute deal. And am I frustrated that we don't have our full complement guys? Hell yes, I am. But he hadn't done anything wrong. Shit, he's tried his ass off. And for anybody to think anything other than that is I mean, it's irresponsible thinking, just to be honest with you. So these kids, their world is social media in many ways. And so when I was told that, heck, we didn't play until 8 o'clock tonight, and you know I'm up at 6 or whatever. So I had time to write a tweet. So I just wanted to do that. And you guys know I tweet a lot. I think I tweeted in 2023 once. But I thought it was the right thing to do, just because anything other than him trying his butt off to be out there is totally wrong, and that should be evident by what he's gone through up until this point. But unfortunately, the knee just didn't cooperate the last couple of weeks.
All right, so I appreciate Bill Self doing that. However, I disagree with one thing he said in there. Irresponsible thinking. You're the one that said what you said. Your body language was your body language, mm-hmm. and you did not say the doctor shut him down. You mentioned Kevin said, you can understand the interpretation that we all took. And Bill Self's usually very guarded in regards to he knows what he's saying and how he says it. He's a veteran. He's not a rookie coach. So I think that's damage control, personally. I don't buy everything that he just said. I'm not saying he's a liar per se, but I am saying that it's damage control. And I think there is something to what he said from he was frustrated. And I think that frustration made it definitely appear maybe worse than what he meant to let on. I think that's possible. But to say that all of us are irresponsible thinkers, we're just watching what you said and actual words that you said. And you didn't say, like, the right thing to have said. And Bill, to me, Bill messed up on this one. And I think it's okay to say somebody that's great still messed up. He's not perfect either. Just like the officials aren't perfect, neither is Bill Self, okay? But he could have easily come out and said it a lot better than he did the other day. And I know he was frustrated. And when we're frustrated, we say things that we regret later. What Bill Self should have came out and said, or when he was being asked about Kellen McCullough, is, listen, he hasn't practiced, like he said, he hasn't really practiced for 6 weeks. We thought he'd be able to go. The doctors and I and Kevin have had conversations, and we've all agreed it's time to shut it down. Did he say that? No.
No.
No. He made it easy. I could go back. I could pull up the comment and play it back. But it really certainly, he didn't say anything about the doctors are telling him he can't play. He was saying that Kevin said he couldn't play. Now, that's not what a coach usually says about their players. They don't usually put it on the player. They usually protect their player. They usually say many things about, even if it's not true, you know what, our doctors say he can't go. And then we find out years later, no, the doctors cleared him, but the coach was covering him. So I think Bill Self, honestly, messed up. And I think he's backtracking, and that's why he put the tweet out there, because he wasn't aware of how much backlash there was. And that's because he's not on Twitter and social media that often, which is good, because he has a job to do. And I think if I'm Kevin McCullough, I appreciate him for coming out and saying these things and putting the tweet out there. And that means that he cares about McCullough and cares about his players. And just because he's frustrated at Kevin McCullough or frustrated with anything, anybody not playing because they're hurt, that doesn't mean he doesn't love the kids or care about the kids. But he's also a competitor. He said the other day in a press conference, they said, what's the hardest part about this year? And he said, not knowing what we have from every day in practice, what we're going to do the next day, all the injuries. And, of course, McCullough was one of them. And I don't think there's any doubt when he said what he said the other day that got people going, whoa, what's going on here, is that he was honestly probably had grown tired of, is McCullough going to play or not?
Yeah.
Is McCullough going to practice or not? Because he's like, I don't know. I thought he was going to be good to go. On March 13th, 9 days ago, Bill Self said, and I quote, that if the the Big 12 tournament game was on a Saturday, that Dickinson could have probably played, and he said that McCullough would probably play. And then a week and a half later, he can't play. So there's no doubt he was frustrated. And I think he made a mistake, and I think that's his way of saying he made a mistake, even though he didn't come out and say he made a mistake. And so then he calls us irresponsible thinkers. And I think that is a little bit irresponsible himself, to be quite frank.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. Listen, you tell Bill Self's been doing this long enough, and we've seen Bill Self doing this long enough to know you know, kind of the way he reacts to certain things, the way he talks about certain things. And he's had to do this part of it before, mm-hmm. too. He's had to do the damage control before mm-hmm. and, you know, come back. And usually it's something that's prepared. And, you know, he had time to think about that and prepare something to put on Twitter. And so, yeah, this is not Bill Self's first rodeo, and it's not our first rodeo with him.
Exactly.
Right? And so it's like if this was like Jerome Tang, we're still trying to feel him out about, you know, like the Naquan Tomlin thing would sure. be a good example of that, right? We're still trying to feel out how he really feels about this, what his body language is going to be about it, and mm-hmm. and when the president's name gets brought up, how does he feel about it? That's not Bill Self. We pretty much know how he feels when he feels it. Mm-hmm. And I was just reading the tweet, too, because I had not read it until while you were kind of playing the cut mm-hmm. and then all that. I was like, oh, what did it actually say? He really doesn't even talk about the doctors until two-thirds down in the mm-hmm. tweet either. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's more of like Kevin decided to do this. Kevin decided to do that. And it's still on Kevin for about two-thirds of the tweet. Mm-hmm. And then finally he's like the doctors, and it was a collective decision to finally say, okay, no, we're not going to try it.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, that's still like putting a lot on Kevin in that tweet. And maybe. And it is what it is. And – you know, if you feel like that and have that kind of reaction to it, but I do think, too, I agree with you, that I think he's just tired of people asking about mm-hmm. it, too.
Yeah.
And that contributes to the right. way he reacts to the question. It's like, no, because when the guy comes back and says, okay, so the first round he might have to go without him, and then you're like, no, he's out. Mm-hmm. He's not playing. He's right. he's shut down.
Right.
And so you finally just put it to bed in a way that probably isn't going to sound great because you're tired of hearing about
yep.
it.
Yeah, you could tell he was tired of it.
Absolutely.
In 30 seconds, we will recap the tournament from yesterday, and a star is born, and Kentucky fans hate him.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. You depend on your vehicle every day to get you where you need to go. The best way to keep it ready and avoid breakdowns is through proper maintenance. Whether it's oil, fluids, filters, spark plugs, belts, hoses, or brakes, we can help. Give yourself the peace of mind of knowing your vehicle is ready to go. For fast, friendly vehicle maintenance, call Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Find us just south of the courthouse or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
Welcome back to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. So the upset of the day yesterday in the NCAA tournament was in the South region, number 14 seed Oakland, who, by the way, is not from California. I had to explain that to my oldest last night. My oldest just assumed they're from California. I said, no, it's from Michigan. Oakland's from Michigan? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Michigan, and it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Oakland, the 14th seed, beat the 3 seed Kentucky 80-76. Jack Golke is now a household name. He became just the fifth player to make 10 or more three-pointers in an NCAA tournament game. He had 32 points. Oakland hit 15 threes. And this is why in a one-and-done tournament, anybody can be beaten. I always love every year, UConn, nobody's going to beat UConn. Nobody's going to beat Kansas. Nobody's going to beat Kentucky. All it takes is a game like this that we saw last night. A guy making 10 threes, and some of these threes were bad shots that just he made. I mean, he just was like...
And that's usually what it takes,
yes,
too, right?
Absolutely. He was unconscious. Okay? Like we said, there's a guy for Samford that hit 4 for 4 for 3 and hit 6 of 28 all year. So things like this can happen in one and done. Not always the best team wins. It might be the hottest team, hottest player, whatever the case may be. Golke was 10 of 20 from 3, took 23-point attempts in this game, did not hit a two-point shot at all, and the Wildcats of Kentucky knocked off by Oakland. It ties for the most points in NCAA tournament history without making a two-pointer. On the season, Jack Golke for Oakland has attempted 355 shots. 347 are threes. He's taken a total of 8 two-point attempts.
That is wild.
Yeah. After the game, he admitted that, you know, hey, I'm not going to be a draft pick or anything, but he says, hey, we can play with anybody.
Obviously, we come in, we're the underdog by all measures, but you just got to, as a player, you can't think that way. You got to go out there and you got to think that you have the same talent level as them. I know they have draft picks, and I know I'm not going to the NBA, but I know on any given night I can compete with those type of guys, and our team can compete with those type of guys. And that's why I was so confident going into it, and that's why I say we're not a Cinderella, because when we play our A game, we can be the best team on the floor.
Well, they were pretty good last night. Kentucky is out. Kentucky lost to St. Peter's, a 15 seed, a few years ago. Lost to K-State in the second round last year. And now there are a lot of Kentucky people who want Calipari gone.
One win in the tournament in the last 4 years. One of those years they didn't even make the tournament.
Yep. And he's only had two postseason wins the last 4 years. And I'm talking SEC tournament. He's only won one SEC tournament game the last 4 years. But here's the thing. When people jump to conclusions, once again, you might want to know the fine print of a contract. If Calipari is fired, the school will have to come up with $34 million to pay him off. Now, so you're basically saying we're going to pay a guy $34 million to go away, who continuously keeps you in for an SEC championship, who has you as one of the best teams in America. They're usually top 15, top 20. He reloads almost every year. Yes, he usually goes with younger players, although he has a mixture of some transfers too. And they flamed out, you know, in two straight tournaments against bad seeds, a 15 and a 14. Last year lost to a K-State team, and that game could have gone either way, of course. But it didn't. So John Calipari is a good coach. It's just the nature of the beast. I mean, I remember when Bill Self and Kansas lost back-to-back years to Bucknell a 14 and Bradley a 13. And there were people saying Bill Self needed to go.
Yeah.
Good thing they didn't make that decision, huh?
Yeah. This... You got to read the fine print, like you said, and you're also talking about a Hall of Famer who's on the sideline and still getting you three seeds and still getting you into the top echelon of the basketball programs in the country. You're not achieving the way you need to in the tournament, but it's not like an easy just, okay, we're going to fire him because he's not winning in the tournament right now. There's a lot that goes into John Calipari and who he is and what he's done in his history. It's like
let me remind people who was the coach before him. Billy Gillespie.
I was like, I forgot already, to be completely honest.
And they weren't doing anything.
Yeah,
like
I knew
this.
I knew Tubby Smith was in there somewhere, mm-hmm. but I forgot about Billy Gillespie, to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, it's you're going to be mad about it and frustrated about it as a Kentucky fan. I get it. But when you're talking about a legend, it's not just an easy cut it off and we're done.
Cal is an outspoken person, and so the rumors and things I've been reading today is, listen, they probably are stuck with him because of the $34 million or whatever. They'd have to buy him out. He got a lifetime contract not too long ago. But it's going to become more and more toxic because a lot of boosters have turned on him. And I read that there are a lot that were upset after the St. Peter's loss. Now you have three straight early exits.
Yeah.
So, but here's my question. And I say this, and you know what I'm about to say. You know me well. And I always say this when you want to fire somebody. If not the guy you have, who? Who is the shiny coach that's going to come in and replace John Calipari, a Hall of Famer? He is a legend, okay? He's only won one title at Kentucky, but he took Memphis to the national championship game. He's been a winner wherever he's gone. Yes, he cheated a little bit, you know, and there is probation wherever you left, so maybe that'll happen in Kentucky too. But
things that are not cheating right now anymore on some of those deals.
He was kind of ahead of the curve, to be honest. But, I mean, if not John Calipari, who's your – well, anybody. No, you don't want anybody.
No.
You want Billy Gillespie to come back? I mean, Tubby Smith to come back? I mean, who's the guy that's even – I mean, who is you – are you going to go get Scott Drew? I mean, who are you going to go get? There's only a handful of coaches that are on Calipari's level now. You're going to get rid of Calipari? You think Bill Self's going to Kentucky? That ain't happening.
No.
I mean, that's the only other – I mean, what other coach are you going to – Tom Izzo ain't going to Kentucky, and he's getting older anyway. What, Danny Hurley's going to go from Connecticut to Kentucky? I mean, maybe. I guess you throw enough money. Like, who is the guy you're going to go get? When people get all riled up, well, we got to fire Ned Yost. We got to fire Andy Reid. We got to fire this guy. We got to fire that guy. I always ask the question – cool. I'll listen to you once you answer this very important but yet simple question. Who are you going to replace him with? Well, I don't know anybody. Shut the hell up and we're done. I ain't talking anymore. That's not even a con. You're just complaining to complain until your dreams come true without doing anything about it. Okay? If there's a problem in your world, in your life, and you don't do anything about it and it keeps happening, that's not on other people. That's on you. You've got to come up with a solution to solve your problem. Okay? So if your problem is, well, I don't make the decision. They have a lot of people smarter than me that can figure out who to hire. Well, then shut the hell up about firing them because they're the ones that should decide about firing them, not you. If you're going to suddenly backpedal from this whole argument, Calipari needs to go. I'm tired of this stuff. Well, who are you going to hire? Well, it's not my job.
Well, it's not. But wait a minute. You just became the AD. You said he's got to be fired. You're taking over the job for the fun part, firing the guy. But then the hard part, you're going to back up and say that's not my job. Wow, you live in a perfect world, don't you? I mean, if you are the one that says he has to be fired, then I always come back with, okay, cool. Who is on your list? And if you don't have a list, you should at least have one name. And maybe it's far-fetched, but at least you have one.
Yeah,
if you haven't thought that far, you shouldn't be talking about firing a guy.
Yeah, come up with anything, even if it's outlandish.
Yeah.
Like, just come up with something. Like,
yeah.
You know,
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I think the biggest comparison that I'd make is, like, we all knew that it was time for Bruce Weber to leave Manhattan.
Sure.
Right? Like, but you're still going to ask the question, who are you going to get?
And what did people say?
Well, I can come up with some name, Brad Underwood. I can come up with Steve Henson if I really wanted to. Who I believe should be the coach, but if I really wanted, Steve Forbes was a guy that I came up with in my mind of, like, maybe he would come back to Kansas.
But you have credibility because you at least had thought about who might be the next coach.
But the people that are just like, fire Bruce Weber and don't think about it, then yeah, Jerome Tang was not on my list, obviously.
No.
And nobody that I thought about. And that could be the same thing for Kentucky fans, right? Like, they say, oh, hey, we want this guy. It could be outlandish. It could be like, oh, we want Coach K to come out of retirement.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, it could be something crazy, right? Mm-hmm. But at least you gave me a name of, of something you've actually thought about. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I try to be like that, and I try to do that. You know, I think even back when we knew it was time for Ron Prince to go, right? We came up with Gary Patterson, was obviously at the top of a lot of people's lists, and that's who they thought maybe was going to be the guy. But obviously, we talked about Brent Venables back then, too. Like, there's always been a name for K-State football, usually, that comes free.
Sure.
Even when Bill Snyder left the second time around, right? Yeah. Chris Klieman wasn't on the top of our list, but we had names that we thought about that could do it. And so I think that is always a key factor, even when you know the writing's on the wall.
Right.
I facetiously and jokingly said, I don't care. Anybody can do what Bruce Weber's doing with this team right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that was fair criticism, but I still had names.
But see, on this situation, I don't think anybody can do what John Calipari
does. Not at all. No. You still got to go out and recruit, and you still got to have the relationships and understand the landscape of what this is right now with NIL and with trying to get guys that are going to be maybe here for a year, maybe two if you're lucky, and then going to the NBA.
You don't appreciate people and what they did until they're gone, whether they're dead and buried or whether they're fired and gone and go somewhere else, and you get this other guy coming in, and next year Kentucky's sitting on the bubble.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the charisma or able to recruit the young kids like Calipari kid. Well, Calipari's not a great coach. He's just a great recruiter. Well, that's a lot better than a lot of coaches, period, that aren't good recruiters or great XO guys. They're just coaches. Three number 11 seeds. If you had 11 seeds in your bracket, you did all right yesterday.
And I didn't.
In our family, it's my two boys that are 12 and 4, and my wife and I are 10 and 6.
I'm 10-6 as well.
I only picked two slight upsets, but they didn't happen. So BYU loses to Duquesne. Texas Tech fell to 11 seed NC State, who's on red hot.
Yeah.
And South Carolina lost to Oregon. So now Dana Altman will go up against his former teamy coach, Creighton, in the second round. How about this one? Former South Carolina guard Jermaine Cousinard went off for a career-high 40 against his former team in the tournament yesterday to lead number 11 Oregon over number 6 South Carolina, 87-73. Cousinard became the first player from a double-digit seed to score 40 points in a tournament victory since Steph Curry for Davidson back in 08.
Yeah, you could just tell by his body language that it was personal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It was ridiculous.
He'll go out and do nothing the next game. Creighton, as I mentioned, beat Akron. The Big 12, number 2 seed Iowa State, won over South Dakota State by 17. Number 7 Texas won in an ugly game over Colorado State. That was one of my chic upset picks that didn't work out. 56-44. North Carolina, only 1 seed to play. They won easily over 16 seed Wagner. Number 2 Arizona beat number 15 Long Beach State by 20. Number 2 Tennessee destroyed number 15 St. Peter's by 34. And Tennessee was the only SEC school to win. Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, said that we need more SEC teams, more Power 5 teams in the NCAA tournament. Instead of the mid-majors. And then his team lost to, but Kentucky went out and lost to Oakland. People don't even know where Oakland's from, the university. They thought California, it's Michigan. And they went 1-3.
Yes, let's give me more SEC teams.
I just got to tell Greg, I watched your conference for 4.5 hours in a row live, and they don't need more teams in the tournament. No. That was gross.
No. Michigan State started the day with a win over SEC school. Mississippi State by 18. A couple other noteworthy things from yesterday. Number 10 seed Nevada. That was one of my chic picks and looked pretty smart for a while.
Yeah.
They're up 17 with 7:39 to go. Dayton ended the game on a 24-4 run and won by 3 over Nevada. Do you know who the head coach of Nevada is? Steve Alford.
Yeah.
And they lost. Oddly enough, the last comeback like that in the NCAA tournament was Nevada doing it to Cincinnati.
Uh-huh, I saw that.
6 years later, it happened in Nevada. Isn't that something? Which means that tomorrow, Gonzaga will get a questionable call to help win the game, and Kansas fans will be mad about the officials. In the East, number 3, Illinois beat number 14, Morehead State, 85-69. Brad Underwood, the head coach of Illinois. A note here, Illinois wing Marcus Domask became the first player since Ja Morant in 2019 to have a triple-double in an NCAA tournament game. Pretty impressive. 7 seed Washington State beat number 10 seed Drake 66-61. Conference-wise, Big 12, I believe, went 3-2. Pac-12 was 4-0. And the SEC went 1-3. Round one.
It just means more, though, in the SEC.
It just means more unless it's the tournament, right? So today, here's the games. 11:15 this morning on CBS. It's Northwestern and Florida Atlantic, which is an interesting game there. Florida Atlantic made the Final Four a year ago. K-State fans well aware of that. Colgate and Baylor will play at 11:40. I have Baylor in Elite Eight, which means Baylor will lose, and then I can officially destroy my bracket. Dusty has them in the you have Final Four Elite Eight. Baylor. You have Final Four?
Final Four.
Oh, well, you'll blow yours up, too.
Yeah.
UAB and San Diego State at 12:45 today. San Diego State a 5-seed. 2-seed Marquette against Western Kentucky at 1 o'clock on TBS. UConn, the 1-seed, picked by many, win the tournament and go back-to-back. It's taking on 16-seed Stetson at 1:45. Clemson, a 6-seed against New Mexico, 11-seed at 2:10. Yale versus Auburn. Auburn is a 4-seed, 3:15. Colorado is my upset pick today over Florida, 10 over a 7, so that means Florida's going to win. Congrats to the Florida Gators on already winning. That's at 3:30 today. I know John Bowden's like, go Buffs! Texas A&M and Nebraska meet not only in the men's tournament today, but the women's tournament this weekend as well. A&M, the 9-seed, Nebraska 8-seed, 5:50 night on TNT. Did you know that Nebraska is a volleyball and basketball school?
I did.
Okay.
I found that out this year.
Do they have a football program?
I don't think so.
Did they eliminate that? It was budget cuts? No. So Nebraska men's basketball has never won an NCAA tournament game. Never. They could change that tonight. I picked A&M. Vermont Vermont versus Duke. I'm cheering for the Catamounts in that one at 6:10 tonight. Duke, a younger team, and you know some of these situations. I'll get to that in a moment about being younger and older in this tournament. Grambling State against Purdue, 16-1. Purdue lost to 16 last year. That's one I'm going to pay attention to tonight at 6:25. Charleston versus Alabama. Alabama does not play defense. Longwood against Houston. Houston, 1-seed, 8:20 tonight. James Madison is my 12 over a 5. Every year, 12 beats a 5. But no 12 beat a 5 yesterday, was there?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, so James Madison's my 12 over 5.
There's a lot of people, actually. That, yeah. I don't think we have like 25 or 30 brackets that I put in, and there's actually quite a few.
Did you have a 12 over a 5?
McNeese.
You did McNeese.
I had McNeese in the Sweet 16. Yeah. That blew up in my
face.
Yeah.
Burn it now.
Yeah.
James Madison, Wisconsin, 8:40 tonight. TCU against Utah State at 8:55. And Grand Canyon, a 12 against St. Mary's, a 5. That's my other 12.
That's pretty popular, too.
I picked Grand Canyon with that one. That's at 9:05. I actually picked 2-12s. I didn't realize that. By the way, James Madison, I don't know for sure, but I know David Riggert, who used to be in Salina, he does play-by-play for the Dukes now. James Madison, mm-hmm. He was a Missouri Western for many years. And I would imagine he's doing play-by-play for the James Madison basketball team and the men's team if he does football play-by-play. I don't know that for sure, but there might be a local tie there. Dave Riggert used to be at KSL in Salina.
Yeah.
And then Missouri Western for many years.
Yeah, good dude and solid play-by-play guy.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
No doubt.
He earned that job for sure.
No doubt. So I want to get to one thing here to conclude the men's tournament. So Kentucky loses yesterday, as we established. I think Jay Wright, former Villanova head coach, is tremendous in studio. We need more guys like him in studio. I always thought Bobby Knight, instead of being out doing color during games, should have been in studio all the time. So please don't send Jay Wright doing color out on the games. Keep him in studio. Jay Wright said something I thought was very interesting yesterday. He said, the game has changed. The landscape has changed. He said, Kentucky lost to Oakland. They have a lot of younger players, which he's right. And he said, all these kids are going to be, all these really highly talented 18-year-old kids Kentucky has, they're going to go on to the NBA, and he said they're going to have really good careers, and they're going to get better and better, and they're going to be way better NBA players than anything Oakland has, and nobody's going to argue that. He said, but at the same time, they're not mature to that level yet. And now, with the transfer portal, I mean, Cam Martin's 25, former Jayhawk, playing for Boise State the other night. What was the kid that transferred 18,000 times that was with KU a year or two ago?
Jalen Coleman-Lance.
Yeah, he was like 26. So, you're not playing 18 versus 18-year-olds. It's not 18 versus 20 or 21-year-olds. You've got some situations where you got 18-year-olds playing 24, 25-year-olds. And so Jay Wright was talking about how Oakland was the more experienced team, the older team, perhaps the wiser team. Does that mean they're the more athletic team? No. But Jay Wright was saying it doesn't really work anymore where you can just throw a whole bunch of young talent together because of the way the parity is in college basketball. And all the transfers, and then guys getting extra years. And so you've got some situations where Kentucky has 18 and 19-year-olds playing against a 22, 23, 24-year-old. Now, that happens for other teams as well. That's why I mentioned Duke. They're very young, and they might be playing Vermont that has guys in their 30s. I don't know. But I thought it was an interesting point. And granted, you can argue, well, Calipari chose to go that route, right? He went with the young, athletic, superstar guys. And Calipari said this on the Jim Rome show the other day, and he's absolutely right. Whether you like him or not, he's made a lot of kids a lot of money. They've gone to the NBA. Sure. Think about all the NBA guys that from Kentucky that are getting max deals. Devin Booker got a max deal. De'Aaron Fox is going to get a max deal. Shai Alexander at Oklahoma City is one of the best players in the league. There, Anthony Davis, of course.
Karl-Anthony Towns.
I mean, some of the greatest players in the NBA that are getting, I mean, a buttload of money are Calipari guys. So maybe they didn't win a title at Kentucky, or they lost in the Elite Eight. You know, John Wall made a ton of money, too, by the way. And there's many others. If you're a person and you want to make a lot of money, you may go to Kentucky and you may get some NIL money. And John Calipari even said this. He goes, if you're going to not come to Kentucky because you didn't give enough money coming here, then you must not think you're good enough to play in NBA. Because I've helped guys make over $4 billion.
Yeah.
And he started going through the math. He goes, hell, it might be $6 billion. And he's not exaggerating.
No.
So this is another reason why you shouldn't be so quick to get rid of Calipari, because you're still, even though you get flame out in the first round against Oakland or St. Peter's, he's still getting McDonald All-Americans. He's still getting 18-year-old kids who are choosing Kentucky. And if I'm an 18-year-old and I think I'm good enough to play in NBA, if I'm choosing between KU, Kentucky, and Duke right now, I'm choosing Kentucky. As long as I can take Calipari's abuse verbally at times, like any other coach,
I
know the pressure of Kentucky, but I'd have it at Duke and Kansas too. But listen, Bill Self hasn't churned out nearly as many great players, neither has John Shire, obviously. Even Mike Krzyzewski didn't do it at the rate that Calipari did the last 10, 15 years. John Calipari has cornered that market. He has more NBA All-Stars and major contracts than any other coach has ever sent the NBA. Now, is he winning championships like Coach K, and has he won as many as Bill Self? No, he only has one. However, if you're a recruit, are you worried about winning a national championship? Are you worried about positioning yourself for the best place in life, and that is go to Kentucky, get seen, be a sixth man on a loaded team that's athletic like Devin Booker, average 10 points a game, go to the NBA at the age of 19, play 1 year and be done, or two, and go make a buttload of money? Gee, I wonder where I would go. As long as you can handle the pressure of Kentucky. So that, just because they lost to Oakland doesn't change. I don't think it's going to hurt Calipari at all when it comes to recruiting.
Oh, no, not when it comes to recruiting.
So if you're a Kentucky fan saying get rid of Calipari, so you're telling me you don't like to see this amazing NBA talent when it's young?
Yeah, the problem is, are you willing to give up championships as a Kentucky fan just to see talent, right?
Or are you willing to give up talent hoping to get a national championship, and you may end up with neither?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a catch-22 for sure to be like, hey, get rid of John Calipari because I want to win. But what you're talking about there.
And granted, a lot of Kentucky fans are not worried about the NBA.
Absolutely. If I'm a diehard Kentucky fan, I've been one all my life. I'm 40 right now, so let's just use me as an example. I've been a Kentucky fan since I was 5. And understood what was going on with college basketball. Do I care that he's bringing in NBA guys and making them money and I'm not winning championships? No, absolutely not at don't care. It's fun to watch that talent. But what's he doing for my program?
Right.
What are we doing? Are we winning? Because I'm a Kentucky fan.
Right.
I don't care what this dude's doing after he leaves Kentucky.
Right. Right.
But for the recruit, it's obvious. It's like, oh, Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis.
But you should care because Davis that helps Alexander. You get some of this talent.
It does. And in the end, you could be in a bad situation if you don't have that talent, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when you flame out and you've won one tournament game in the last 4 years in the NCAA tournament, you start thinking, like, is it even worth this
right,
part of it?
Right.
And so, but the recruits aren't going to, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, let's go play for Cal because yeah. I'm about to make some money.
Yeah.
And if I have a stopgap in here because I have to, if I'm going to pick G League or if I'm going to pick go play for Cal, understand what I need to do to get to that next level and succeed and excel at that next level because it seems like he's the one doing it, then absolutely I'm going to go play for Calipari. Mm-hmm. If I have even a little bit of thickness in my skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an easy decision if he wants you.
Yeah.
I feel like. Great. But again, I'm not part of that generation. I don't mm-hmm. know, you know, how everybody reacts and feels about all that stuff.
Yeah.
I won't even say what I was going to say because it would go into a different conversation, mm-hmm. but it's just, yeah, make the decision. If you're a recruit, absolutely, I want to play for Cal. Nothing he does in this tournament is going to hurt him recruiting wise.
No. John Calipari's lifetime contract in 2019, $86 million. Oakland University's entire endowment, $102 million. And they just beat Kentucky. Wow. That's pretty impressive. K-State guard Cam Carter has entered the transfer portal. Carter played in 70 games over the past two seasons, averaging 10.5 points. The past season as a starter, averaged 14.5 points, started all 34 games for the Wildcats. Was this expected?
I hadn't even gone through it mm-hmm. to see who I thought might be leaving. It's definitely not something that surprises me. I think it's just there's not going to be anybody that leaves in like that would surprise me with this program right now. Just because mm-hmm. they didn't hit the, as Jerome Tang said, they didn't hit the standard that they have for wins. And so whether that's, hey, we want you to go somewhere else because we want somebody to fill your spot, or I want to go somewhere else because we didn't win like I thought we would, nothing's going to surprise me. So I'm not going to say I was fully expecting Cam Carter to leave right now, but mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me even a little bit.
Nothing should anymore with the transfer portal. The 4-seed K-State women, 25-7, start their tournament run today at Bramlage at home against Portland at 3:30. You going to the game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I thought so based on what you're wearing.
You could tell.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we have to have cameras in this for the people to watch us, you know, pick our nose.
I got my Gap Goat shirt on. We're good to go.
You're ready to go. Here's Jeff Mitty on Portland, the opponent today.
Their style of play, they're going to press you. They're a little bit West Virginia-like. They're going to gamble a little bit. They're going to drop back in zone that can look like man that can look like zone. So they can confuse you. But if they don't confuse you, there's going to be some opportunities there.
K-State women, if they win, which they should today, then they would face possibly Colorado, John Bowden's Buffs, who beat LSU early in the year in the second round, but it would be at Bramlage. That's a tough second round game.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that Colorado-Drake game is going to be pretty interesting, mm-hmm. too, from what everybody's saying about it.
Who knows?
If you got a ticket, you can go to both games. I'm actually looking forward to watching it. And listen, hopefully K-State wins, so I'm not in a bad mood when I'm watching the second game. I might leave.
Yeah, if they lose, you're not going to stay.
And then somebody's getting my ticket for Sunday, so.
There you go. Other Big 12 women's teams on the court today. Texas hosts Drexel at 2. Baylor women play Vanderbilt at 5. Iowa State takes on Maryland at 6:30 in Stanford. Nebraska women play A&M just like the men do, and both those games are tonight. But the men play at 5:50, and the women play at 9:30, so as Nebraska...
Yeah, you'd be able to back-to-back doubleheader against A&M. It's just like a normal high school doubleheader night.
It is the perfect day in the history of Husker athletics. There's never been a bigger day in Husker athletics ever, ever, ever than watching back-to-back tournament games of the men and then the women. The football program, never been successful.
Against A&M, where Trev Alberts went.
Right, and Nebraska. Nebraska's never been good at anything else, just basketball. Okay, they won a few titles in the volleyball. Oh, yeah, back in the Stone Age, they won some football titles, 94, 95, 97. Yeah, okay, I get it. I remember now. It's been so long, I tend to forget those things, Dusty. Sorry, I'm just trolling those Husker fans out there.
Got
to do it. KU women are off to L.A. in the Portland Regional. They're the 8 seed at 19-12, take on the 9 seed Michigan, which is 20-13. Who's the 1 seed on that bracket that KU would play?
USC.
USC?
Yeah.
Oh, they got the Juju Watkins. She's a heck of a player.
Yeah.
And finally, NFL news, the tush push, the brotherly shove, is here to stay, at least for the next NFL season. NFL Executive Vice President Trey Vincent has confirmed that the controversial play, which I don't know why it should be controversial, stop it, will remain a legal play this season. Vincent added that there will not be a proposal presented this offseason that would attempt to ban the play. As far as I'm concerned, it's frustrating when you can't stop it. I know it's kind of boring in a way. Fourth and inches, fourth and one, fourth and one and a half. Oh, we're just going to plow Hurts, you know, whatever. You know what? Jason Kelsey's not going to be the center anymore. Maybe they won't be as effective with it. But as I said, just like instead of banning the shift in baseball, beat it by learning how to adapt. Instead, hitters aren't, they're too stubborn to hit the ball the other way. So we got to ban the shift. And now you can't shift. Oh, we can't stop the tush push. Let's eliminate it. Well, guess what? They're not, at least for this season. I am okay with that. If stop it. I mean, you know what? What's next? Well, we're going to have to ban Mahomes from the league
because
he wins too many Super Bowls.
My only contention with that has not been that I don't think they should be able to do it. My contention with that rule is like a single person cannot assist a runner.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
A group can. Like that. I don't get that part of it, right? Like how? Why can't Travis Kelce go give a push to Travis or Isaiah Pacheco by himself?
Yeah.
But the whole entire line, fullback, quarterback, everybody can.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only contention. I think he should be able to do both. If he can't stop him, just let him do it.
I agree with you.
But also don't let the Eagles get down to the 1 yard line, 2 yard line and do that.
There you go.
That's another way to stop it.
I agree.
If you can't figure out actually how to stop the actual play, don't let him get down there. That's how you stop it.
Football is about physicality. Yes, it's about violence as well. And there's nothing more violent than a tush push. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the tournament. And how's your brackets doing? If you burned them already, I'm right there with you.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.